And now the game where we ask successful people about things that really shouldn't matter to successful people. It's called Not My Job. So Mad Money, the daily show about the stock market on CNBC, is not your typical financial advice show. The host shouts, he throws things around, he pushes buttons to make funny noises to underline his points. But he's rich, so he's not crazy, he's eccentric. Jim Cramer, host of Mad Money, joins us now. Jim Cramer, welcome to Wait, Wait. So I just naturally assumed, I guess seeing your style, I should have known this, but I just assumed you'd been one of those guys who got out of college and went right to work in Wall Street, but that wasn't your background, right?
No, I went right to work as a sports writer in Tallahassee and then a homicide reporter in California.
Really?
Yeah.
You were a homicide reporter?
Oh, yeah. I covered everybody who died violently in the Los Angeles area for about a year.
And did your career covering murderers and victims of terrible crimes prepare you in any way for a career in Wall Street?
You know, at the time, I was philosophic when I was out there because these were real people in real lives, and then you get to Wall Street, and it's really kind of, it's tawdry. It's about making money and nothing really else, and I think that that's difficult for a younger person who was idealistic before I went in there.
Really? So, I mean, you went from covering murderers to talking to bankers, and you found that, like, terrifying and disillusioning?
You know, I thought there'd be some soul to it, but there was no soul to it.
Okay. So why, then, did you devote your career to it?
Because I was living in my car before I went to it, and I really wanted to be able to make some money.
So you were living in your car?
Yeah. In my second year out of college, I was living in a tough neighborhood. Someone stole everything from me over a period of 3 days. And I was evicted. All I had was my Ford Fairmont, and came back and ended up living with my sister in a studio apartment in Greenwich Village. Got my life back together, went to law school, and then got a job on Wall Street and stuck it out for a while.
So when did you start giving out investment advice, as you do now?
I started in 1981, and there I used to give it, frankly, on my answering machine. I used to say, I'm not here right now, but I think you should go buy...
Wait a minute. You. What were you doing at the time? What was your job?
I was at law school.
You were at law school, and you would like. I mean, you write about this in your new book, Get Rich Carefully, and you say that you'd be sitting in like law school class and reading the Wall Street Journal in the back of the room.
Right, and some of the professors didn't like it. Other professors would call me up and say, well, why are you doing this? And I'd say, because I want to run money. That's what I want to manage money. And I was running a couple of the professors' money by the time I graduated.
Really? So yeah. they would call on you, like, what are you doing reading the Wall Street Journal in my class? And by the end of the year, they're like, yeah, could you invest some money for me?
Absolutely. There were some of my initial investors in my hedge fund.
And you said you left stock tips in your answering machine, so if anybody happened to call you for whatever reason, they would get a stock tip?
Absolutely. And that's how I got some large investors. I didn't think I would, but my largest investor gave me $500,000 after listening to 3 stock tips in a row, making a lot of money.
So they would just call you up and on your Amazon, you know, buy Acme Amalgamated, and they would, and make a lot of money, and they just keep calling you?
Yes, and I had some great hits. And a very wealthy investor said that he had made more money off the answering machine than he had in 20 years with money managers.
So that's just pre-internet stuff. I guess
that's amazing.
Yeah, and then he gave me $500,000, a check for $500,000. I had never seen anything like it. And he said, look, I owe it to you. I've been using your answering machine tips, and I feel badly, and here's $500,000. Go run it for me.
Wow. And was that your start? That was the start of your career, because you famously ran very successfully a hedge fund for many years.
Yes, that was how it got started, off the answering machine.
Right. Now, I'm going to make an observation here. I've been talking to you for a little while. You seem quite sane.
Well, I'm not the guy. There's a guy on Mad Money, and he's me, but I have to amp it up. And in reality, what you've got me in Summit, New Jersey, where I'm a dad and kind of a regular guy.
So you are not like that in real life. You are not totally amped up to 11, shouting. You're not talking to your kids, all right, kids, time to have dinner. Gawoo, gawoo. That's not you at all.
No, and I know it's funny because in town I have a persona, and it's not the guy on TV. I try to be true to my words of what I say on TV, but there is an entertainment component and a coaching, teaching component that I try to make it come alive, but I'm a real nebbish around town.
Do you think that there are people who watch your show who don't care at all about finance or investment, but just like you jumping around the set and hitting the sound effects and throwing your books?
That's me.
Definitely. Definitely.
Really?
Yeah, well, there's like little kids who like the show. I mean, they you know, it's kind of like a... They like the sound effects. They like the drama of it. And even though it is about stocks.
There are times when it's like a Japanese game show.
I like to watch it because I think you look like Louis C.K. And it's sort of funny. It's sort of like Louis C.K. acting crazy giving financial advice.
I'm often confused with him and with Vladimir Lenin.
You're confused with Vladimir Lenin?
And Louis C.K., that's hilarious.
I've been stopped several times in New York in the last, say, 2 years with people who have said, oh, you look familiar. Is it possible that you were related to Lenin? And
oh, so, the irony.
I know. I mean, he's certainly not the great capitalist. And then Louis C.K., whom I think is incredibly funny, but also he has a drearier show, obviously. We can call it that. But a lot of people have said that they compared him to me much more than they have, say, Mad Men and John Hamm.
Yes, that would be lovely.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is that you're a bald Jew from Jersey making good for yourself, so I'm pleased to see you.
Bingo.
Absolutely. Bingo. All right, Jim Cramer, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Look at my beautiful shrub.
That's right. You, as we've discussed, former successful hedge fund manager. But what do you know about actual hedges? We're going to ask you three questions about the world of topiary. Get just two right. Topiary, of course, sculpted hedges, yes. Just get two of these questions right. You'll win Carl's voice for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Jim Cramer playing for?
Jim is playing for Kathy Picora of Homer Glen, Illinois.
All right. You ready to play, Jim? All right. Here's your first question. In 2002, a Santa Cruz, California resident's artful topiary in front of her home made the news when what happened? A neighbor called the cops to complain that the 20-foot-tall sculpted shrub was far too phallic for her tastes. B, the woman burned down half the neighborhood when she tried to make her Moses and the burning bush scene, quote, super realistic. Or C, she sculpted the words, free candy here, children, out of poison ivy.
I think this is definitely B, Moses and the burning bush.
Well, you think she made a little sort of scene of Moses in front of a bush and she lit the bush on fire and it caused a problem?
Yeah. Definitely not.
Actually, it was A, it was the incredibly phallic. She did this very large sort of cylindrical thing and with some rounder things next to it. And
I thought it looked cool.
Okay. That's okay. You still have two more chances here, Jim.
Okay.
Next topiary question. One group in Seattle has actually come out to advocate against topiary. What's their reasoning? A, sculpting plants to look like animals makes them no longer safe for vegetarians. B, bad topiary is, quote, the senseless torture of shrubs, unquote. Or C, extra leaves are the mustaches of the plant world, and mustaches are really cool right now.
I don't know about the insensitivity to plant life. I'm going to eliminate B.
No, wait a minute. I just want to point out to you, it's Seattle.
Oh, I'll go with B then.
You're right. The group is called Plant Amnesty, and they do not seem to be joking. All right, this is good. You've gotten one right with one to go. You get this one right, you win all the marbles. In 2008, in Liverpool, England, a topiary tribute to the Beatles made news when what happened? A, it was mobbed by screaming teenage girl shrubs. B, Pete Best snuck in and tried to grow a Pete Best bush next to it. Or C, someone beheaded Ringo.
I think that it sounds like B, C.
You're right. Ringo somebody beheaded Ringo.
Yes!
Yes! That was a little bit of the Jim Cramer we know and love from TV. Just a little bit. It was exciting to hear. Carl, how did Jim Cramer do in our quiz?
He had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Kathy Picora.
Yeah, Kathy. Oh, it's exciting. Jim Cramer is the host of Mad Money and CNBC. He's part of TheStreet.com. And his new book is Get Rich Carefully in bookstores now. Jim Cramer, thank you so much for joining us on Wet Wait, Don't Tell Me. Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye.
Money don't get everything it's due. What it don't get, ah!